Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. So, have you ever wondered why some people get so stressed and overwhelmed by the slightest disruption or change in their lives? And why it is that two people experiencing the exact same life event, it could be a job loss, a serious illness, the death of a loved one, why is it that one person can react so differently to another? And ultimately, what does that mean to our lives in general? Well, today we're going to look at the three C's of psychological hardiness to help overcome stress and increase personal growth. My guest is Stephen J. Stein, and together with Paul T. Bartone, he wrote Hardiness, Making Stress Work for You to Achieve Your Life Goals. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest. Dr. Stephen Stein is a clinical psychologist. He's the founder and executive chair of MultiHealth Systems, a leading assessment and behavior analytics company. He's a former chair of the Psychology Foundation of Canada, former president of the Ontario Psychological Association, and he currently teaches at the Directors College of Canada. His co-author, retired Colonel Paul T. Bartone, also PhD, is a visiting research fellow at the Institute for National Security Policy. During his 25-year career in the U.S. Army, he served as commander of the U.S. Army Medical Research Unit in Europe, and he taught leadership and psychology at West Point. All right, so let me bring my guest on. He again is Stephen J. Stein, and the book is called Hardiness, Making Stress Work for You to Achieve Your Life Goals. Stephen Stein, welcome to the show today. Welcome.
Nice to be with you, Vicki.
Well, I really enjoyed your book, a subject that is, I think, very interesting. And the whole premise about hardiness is if we develop hardiness, it can improve our lives in many ways. And I totally agree with that. I think it's much needed in our culture right now. And the good news is that if hardiness is not innate to us, if we're not born with it, we can learn to cultivate it. But before we dive into all that, I want to just ask you to define a couple of things up front, if you would. Over the years, I've talked with, I don't know how many, hundreds of psychiatrists, psychologists, behavioral specialists, and they pretty much agree that our level of happiness and emotional stability is largely determined by our resilience. I think of hardiness as being part of resilience. So from your perspective on hardiness and the work you've done in the book, how do you define resilience versus hardiness?
So resilience is really your ability to come back to where you were after a stressful situation. You're bouncing back. And resilience is determined by a number of factors. It could be biological, it could be psychological, physical, and so on. Hardiness is kind of the engine. It's the mental part, what we call a mindset. And the other part that we see about hardiness is when we talk about coming back from a stress, people who are high in hardiness come back even stronger than they were before the stressful event, whereas resilience is really coming back to where you were before the event.
Okay, makes sense. And so there's been a ton of scientific research and studies on hardiness. They've been going on for more than 20 years, I understand. And then the book is really, you provide strategies in there to help us move toward becoming more hardy if we're not already there. So what is it in people that when people react differently to similar situations, could be a massive job layoff, illness, any kind of disruption, divorce, death in a family. You're saying their level of hardiness is what really pushes them toward being either overwhelmed or getting on with life and moving forward in a positive way.
That's right. And in terms of that level of hardiness, there's three things that really make up what we call hardiness, that mindset of hardiness. We call them the three C's. So the first is control, your ability to really take charge of your life and what you're doing, realizing that you can't control external things like the weather and those kinds of things, but you can control your reaction to those external things. The second C is challenge. And what we find is that hardy people are flexible. They like change. When stressful things happen, they're inquisitive. They learn from it. They don't just get brought down by it. And the third C is commitment. We find that people who are hardy have a purpose in life. They have goals. They have things that they look forward to. So being strong in those three areas, we find, make the difference in people's lives.
Okay. So I'd like to go a little bit deeper into each of those. Let's begin with commitment. And let's talk about seeing life as meaningful and having purpose, because that is really key to this C, if you will, in hardiness. Why is it, I heard you talk about your 100-year-old mother and how you sit down with her and set goals for her. So talk to us a little bit about why that's important.
It's important because, you know, looking forward, having a goal, having something that you want to see in the future keeps you driven. It's a motivational factor. And we find that the hardy people who score high in hardiness really have that. They really have something that drives them, and it's usually a future-oriented thing. They don't live in the past. They live looking forward in the future.
Right. And while we're talking about commitment, I want to talk about commitment to oneself, because often we can be very committed to, say, work goals and, you know, goals that are important to our family, and we put ourselves last. And if we promise ourselves we're going to get more healthy, or we're going to get more rest, or we're going to, you know, get more adventure in our life, and we kind of let that fall by the wayside because we're committed to everybody else's goals and fulfillment, that can have a very detrimental effect on us as individuals, right?
That's right. Yeah, it really is being committed to yourself, your goals, and your life. And, you know, some of those goals are pretty big goals. So we talk about ways in which you can break them down into smaller achievements that you can get daily, weekly, monthly, and so on.
Mm-hmm. So let's look at challenge, number two of the C's. People with high challenge, you say, enjoy variety. They tend to see change and disruptions in life as interesting opportunities to learn and grow. So we're talking about growth mindset here.
Very much. We did some research looking at the relationship between minds, like traditional mindset, growth mindset, and what we call the hardiness mindset. And there is definitely a lot of overlap. And challenge is one of those areas where there is that overlap. It's being curious. It's wanting to learn more, looking for change, you know, adapting, those kinds of things.
Right. It's very hard, I think. I just, when you were talking then, I just flashed back to like many, many, many years ago when I was married, first married. And my husband had called me at work one day, and I was in a really important meeting for me. I got called out of it by my assistant because she said, "Your husband said it's really, really urgent." And I was like, "Oh my God, what's happened? Who's died? Who's had an accident?" And I go to the phone and he's like, "The car needs a new starter motor." And so these kind of things, and the way we look at life, and I'm like, "Well, big deal, you know, cars need repairing," but he's like all stressed out about it. And these things make such a difference in the way you see life and work through it, I think.
And that's what differentiates people, right? Some people just get triggered by the smallest things and it just sets them off. Whereas other people look at it as, "Oh, well, maybe I can learn more about cars and how to repair them, or where I should take them, who the best mechanic is."
Right.
And look at the positive side of that.
Right. And so let's look at the third C, control. Now, what's the difference here? I understand, you know, Stephen Covey was, when I really first came across, you know, focus on your locus of control and what you can influence and let go of the rest. And that was many, many years ago. But I think often people confuse control with being controlling. So would you go a little deeper into that? Because controlling can be a problem in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's being in control of your own life. It's not controlling other people. So when you're when you're high in control, you sort of differentiate which things you do have control over and which things you really don't. And it may be other people. You don't really have control of other people. You may try and influence them in certain ways, but you know how far your influential skills can go. So being high in control is really focusing on what you can change as opposed to the things you can't. And you're right, Stephen Covey talked about the whole area of locus of control has over 40, almost close to 50 years of research behind it. So we have a lot of bases to go on the importance of self-control.
Yeah, I know from having gone through that course many years ago, it made such a difference to my life when I could differentiate, what I could control, what I could influence, and letting go of the rest. It made a huge difference to me. So can you measure hardiness? I mean, how do you, when you're working with someone, talking with someone, how do you measure that, if you can?
Well, my co-author, Paul Bertone, that's been, a big part of his career. He started studying the area of hardiness almost 40 years ago. It was originated at the University of Chicago, and his work has been developing a tool or a measure, which we now call the Hardiness Resilience Gauge. And what it does is it looks at each of those three areas and compares you to the population at large to see how you compare to other people. And we're looking at different occupational groups, and we've been testing people all around the world, just trying to slice and dice it up in different ways.
Right, right. And so let's talk about some of the changes you've seen in people who've learned to cultivate hardiness. Now might be a good time to talk about how you broke down the book, because it does include case studies. It's very readable. It's not at all, one of those heavy data-driven clinical type books. It's very, very readable. I found it enjoyable. So you've got case studies in there. You have anecdotes in there, exercises to help develop psychological hardiness. So when you're putting this together, what kind of stories caught your eye, and do you have a favorite story?
Yeah, there's a lot of really great stories, and we tried to get a couple different things. One was people who've gone through terrible tragedies in their life, or people who grew up in very difficult situations, grown up in poor neighborhoods or bad neighborhoods with a lot of crime, with single parents, and who made a total success of their lives. And we looked at, what turned them around, what made them become successful. And on the other side of the stories that we looked at, we wanted people in high-performance kinds of occupations. We wanted athletes and we wanted musicians, because they have to perform in front of thousands or millions of people.
Right.
And really, deal with pressure. And we wanted to take what we could learn from those people that all of us can apply in our everyday lives, at work, at home, with our friends. So what we really want to do is capture some of the techniques used by these people who work in high-stress situations.
Right. And so did you have a favorite story?
Oh, I had a lot of favorite stories. I like the story of the homicide detective and how he gets through dealing with very gruesome kinds of details that he has to deal with. Like, a lot of people have the impression that, how can you sleep at night? How can you live after these difficult situations. I thought that was interesting. The music director that I focused on was interesting too. He grew up in a very bad neighborhood. A lot of his friends had ended up in jail or dead or whatever, but he focused on playing the bass guitar. He had a music teacher that really encouraged him, and he had a talent for music and ended up to be a very successful music director in spite of all the things that were going on around him. Mm. But I really love those kinds of stories where people defy the environment, defy what's going on around them, and survive and thrive. We call it thrive, do really well in spite of it.
Right, right. One of my favorite stories was about Bonnie Carroll. She was a 30-year U.S. Air Force vet. And was devastated when her husband died, couldn't find any support, any government groups, anything that really helped her. And so she decided to start an organization to help families going through other events. So, these are situations that everybody goes through. That's a life situation. Death, we're all surrounded by it at some point in our life. But what is it that makes the difference between somebody like Bonnie, who can't find what she's looking for, and she's like, okay, I'm going to go out there and basically be of service to other people and start this organization that I would have liked to have had. What, and I'm guessing you're going to say it's hardiness, but explain to us what the difference is there.
Yeah, well, Bonnie's also an amazing story, and I think she's one of those people where a lot of these skills come fairly naturally. She's a go-getter, a go-doer. I remember she told me that during her own Air Force training, a lot of the people in her group were complaining about how tough it was and how difficult it was, and she was kind of like, oh, this is, you know, bring it on, you know, I can do this. And she has that can-do attitude that she carries with her wherever she is in all these different situations. So she's probably a good example of someone who more naturally comes upon this kind of a mindset and approaches the world in a very positive way and thrives as a result of it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she had a very stressful career. The homicide detective, another one. And as you said, professional musicians, athletes. There are lots of professions out there that are quite stressful in their own way. So what are some of the most stressful occupations that you found during your research?
Well, first responders are clearly very stressful. Mm. You know, people who fire people, ambulance drivers, medics, combat soldiers. Because a lot of Paul's career was in the military, he was a colonel, and he taught at West Point. So he had a lot of research and experience in the military side and combat soldiers, special forces, and all those kinds of people. So those are very stressful jobs. Those people, their lives are on the line. Police officers, you don't know if you're going to come home that night, you know, for many of them. So we want to look at what goes on with those people. How do they make it through the day? How do they make it through crisis situations? And what can we learn from those situations?
Right, and you just mentioned he was at West Point at some time, and there's a chapter in the book on West Point recruits and what makes them, you know, those stay and what makes them drop out. What did you find out in your book? I think it was 20% of people drop out.
Yeah, there was a fair dropout level. And again, he was finding that ability to look for the challenge in the situation, to see it as interesting, as something I can conquer, something I can work with, and the control, the fact that I can manage my own behaviors, I can manage my day-to-day and not get distracted by outside things that they throw at me or that get in the way. And commitment is really big, that you really believe in what you're doing. You believe in that case, you believe in your country, you believe in the military, you want to serve. And those things can be driving forces in getting you through those situations.
Yeah, yeah. So we said at the beginning that hardiness can be cultivated if it's not within us. And I wonder, do you find it kind of runs in families a little?
It can. As we know, you know, no two kids are usually the same.
Right, right.
A couple of kids, but we do find sometimes you'll find one parent has these hardiness factors or skills, and one of the children may carry on with it and be very similar.
Yeah, I was wondering that when I was reading the book, because I kind of think of my family as hardy, if you will. And, you know, I think the people around you are hardy, you kind of pick it up, you're made to pick it up, you know, it's like suck it up sometimes. But
we find, you know, a lot of the athletes we study and the athlete families, we find that's usually the case, that both mother and father are very athletic, and they encourage the family, that, you know, all the kids to be athletic. And a lot of the mindset of the high-performance athlete carries through the family.
Oh, that's interesting, because my parents were athletes, not that we were high-performance athletes by any means. So let's look at ways we can cultivate hardiness. That's what I want to get to, because I think it's based on your book and all the research done and how I feel myself. It's central to living a good life. So if we're down on our hardiness, if you will, and we want to build our commitment, what's important to know about building commitment?
Well, building commitment, we usually start with finding goals, finding, you know, something you want. Some people are just bored and they just go to work every day and they have nothing to look forward to. So one thing we do is we have people look back into their past, into their childhood. When you were young, what did you get excited about? What did you really like when you were younger? For me, it was music. You know, I loved music. I learned to play the saxophone. I played in a school band. And I brought that back into my life after not looking at it for 35 years or so. And those kinds of things make a change. For other people we've worked with, it's been a variety of things. It may have been dance. It may have been reading certain kinds of books, mystery novels, whatever. But finding that thing that really excited you when you were young and getting back into it.
And one of the things you say important to building commitment is pay attention to the world around us, which right now many are actually choosing to opt out of paying attention. I hear all the time, and I'm sure you do too, people say, oh, I don't watch the news anymore. I can't deal with it. But you say it's important for us to pay attention to what's going on.
I think it's important to pay attention and to try and be somewhat objective about it and not let your emotions run away with you. And we talk about that in some of the research on paying attention to news, whether it's good or bad, and just stepping back and using that sense of challenge, that sense of being curious and looking at things from both sides, not just relying on one side for all your news.
Right, right. And then how do we build our control? And obviously we talked about this a little, you know, we want to focus our time and energy on things we can control or influence. But what else beyond that, Stephen?
So we build a number of questions that we can ask in various situations. Like, you know, what are some of the things that I could have done in that situation? What are the things that I could do better? You know, what are the behaviors? What are my reactions? What are my thoughts? We break it down into thoughts, feelings, actions, and try and focus on those things that you can change. You can change your thoughts. And how do you do that? By asking questions. So there are questions you can ask yourself to be more in control, to think of things differently, and take charge of situations.
Right. And then how do we build our approach to challenge?
Well, challenge is flexibility. So that's really about trying new things, stepping out of your comfort zone. Don't be afraid to try something completely new and different. And there are structured ways in which you can do that. I mean, everything from taking a different route to work, having something for lunch that you've never had before, trying to stretch yourself into flexibility, into new things, and doing it starting with small things. You could work your way up into bigger things, and you'll find life is much more rewarding if you try new things and experience them.
Right. And isn't it true that the more we accomplish, if we accomplish something we've wanted to do and put it off for a long time, it's such a great feeling. It kind of expands out, doesn't it?
Absolutely. That's why we get the daily goals and the weekly goals. I like to know at the end of the day that I've accomplished something. You know, like I will check this interview off on my list of things that I've done today. So you feel good that you've moved forward in life, that you've gone one step further than you were the day before.
Right. And it also helps build new neural pathways to strengthen neural pathways, right?
Absolutely. It's great for your brain. You want to keep learning, keep trying new things. And, you know, you don't have to ever stop. You mentioned my mother is 100 years old. We try and get her to experience new things all the time. She watches TV, she follows the news, but she doesn't stop wanting to learn more and ask questions. And that's what keeps you vital. That's what life is about.
I know. You know, I always, my mother's gone now, but I always used to call her if there was something happening in the world that I didn't quite understand, because she was the one who would break it all down and analyze it for me. And it kept her mind very active. Even though her body failed, her mind was super active.
Well, it must have influenced you because you've gone into journalism.
Right. Right. So I think this is a great book. Anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to get out today?
You can always visit our website.
Yep, I've got that here.
Hardinessmindset.com. And I think there we give 9 tips on how to improve your hardiness.
Yeah, so the book is called Hardiness, Making Stress Work for You to Achieve Your Life Goals. And again, the website is hardiness.mindset.com. There's some great, you have some great videos up there. I took a look at those too.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So a final quick thought you'd like to leave on hardiness and why it's important to us, where we can begin today if we feel we're lacking in it, Stephen.
Sure. Start by thinking ahead. What is it you want out of life? What do you want in your future? What are your goals? And it's just a matter of starting to work step by step towards the things that make you happier and trying to do less of the things that bring you down and make you miserable.
Great. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your expertise there. And for our listeners, again, the website is hardiness.mindset.com, and you can find out much more about Stephen J. Stein and Paul T. Bartone, the authors of the book, up there, hardiness.mindset.com. And you can find more than 1,000 podcasts at conversationslive.net. We post a new one every Wednesday. If you have feedback, comment, or questions on today's show, you can reach me at the same place on our website, conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us. Until next week, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.